Latvan Schlag!
You are listening to Wide the Truck!
Are you ready to truck? It is time for your Nooner with Dooner. For your 5 p.m.er, if you're on SiriusXM, welcome live audience, welcome on-demand audience, welcome SiriusXM radio audience. What a week. This is Matt's week, by the way. Are you gearing up? Are you packing? I gotta head down there with a team from Truck Parking Club at like 5:30 in the morning on Wednesday. I'm excited, though. It's gonna be a good time. I think I'm like in Kentucky till Sunday, too. So it'll be really good if you're gonna be there. Let me know. DM me, at Timothy Dooner on Twitter, all those kind of things. I'm looking forward to it. We have an awesome show today. We got a headline to start out with. Not a good one to kick off the week, by the way. Hope you all had a good St. Patrick's Day. Let's check it out here. Flock Freight has some layoffs coming up. That's right. Grace Sharkey has the story. It says here, Friday marked a turn of events for Flock Freight, a provider of shared truckload solutions, as the company decided to reduce its workforce by 54 individuals. The company's last reported layoffs were around this time last year in April of 2023. They said the strategic move was aimed at calibrating the company's trajectory towards profitability. The positions affected were primarily back office roles focused on enhancing automation for Flock's operational efficiencies. Their founder made a comment to FreightWaves. Their co-founder and CEO, Oren Zelansky, said, "The people supporting our customers and carriers are those building the IP have not been affected. These moves have put us in a position where our path to profitability can be measured in months, not years." I guess they're maybe seeing that happen this year. But according to PitchBook data, Flock's most recent round of fundraising came in 2021. It was a Series D. It was led by SoftBank Investment Advisors for $215 million. They were a unicorn. They were worth $1.3 billion at the time. But not everyone's happy with this company. Molo co-founder Andrew Silver said, "And they just laid more people off yesterday. The only positive of this awful market sustaining so long is it hopefully takes out a lot of trash in this space." Wow. Big comments out of Andrew Silver over there. Not happy with it, but hey, hope everything works out for the people that are still with Flock, and maybe they'll get to that road of profitability like they said. Speaking of shots fired, take a look at this unique method for strapping a container over here. Roll the tape. Look at this. This guy's got some kind of strapping gun, some kind of strapping cannon, strap confetti. Robert Cox says, "I always wear a hard hat when throwing or removing straps, or I'm near someone that's just throwing straps." You know, if you, for example, I couldn't find this exact strap worker, but I did find this thing called the Nancy. Take a look at this. If you have like a chuck it for your dog, this is a similar idea, except you throw your straps over the top of the container like a chuck it in case your arm is messed up. It says over, it's $135, by the way. It says, "With our strap thrower, no more flipping straps to get them to line up with the winch. No more straps getting hung up on the top of a load. Odd shaped loads are a cinch. After tossing a couple straps with the Nancy strap thrower, you'll be able to lay the strap exactly where you want. Order yours today and save your back, wrists, and elbows and your shoulders from being sore. Invented by a fellow trucker." Now, why is this thing called the Nancy, and why does that logo have a tutu on it? Well, it was founded by a guy named Dave Johnson, who's a flatbedder, and he said he could not come up with the name. He asked his entire family. He put a $50 bounty on the name, and eventually his younger sister said, "Hey, why don't you just name it after me?" So it got stuck with the Nancy, and he said, "Yeah, it sounds like what you call somebody who, like, you know, who's a sissy and can't throw." Although, is that the best marketing? I don't know. Hellben Hagen said he's going to get one, though. Maybe they'll send these at Matt's. I can try one out for you. Hey, speaking of Matt's, coming right up, Road to Matt's. We're going to be doing Truck What the Truck live on Friday. There's no show on Wednesday. We'll be live on Friday, though, for Matt's. We'll be too busy driving over there, setting up all that stuff. We're going to get social content, though, so follow me on social. Follow What the Truck on social. But we'll be live at noon at Truck Parking Club's booth. It's 66232. Come on by. That'll be 12 Eastern time. Then at 5 p.m. Eastern, we're going to be on the SiriusXM stage doing a live What the Truck on radio. It's going to be an awesome time. By the way, March Madness also kicks off this week. Carrie Jablonski from Trucker Tools, former What the Truck guest, she was just on here last week. She posted some great facts about this. She said there's 136 teams, 68 men, 68 women. They travel across the country starting tomorrow night for games over the next 3 weeks at 33 different locations. If you're in logistics, just think about all of the struggle it takes to pull that off. And here's some of the facts that she pulled out. She said the only city to host both men's and women's games in the first round of the tournament this year, Spokane, Washington. Because rackets are meant to be busted. The Final Four basketballs with the team's logos on them, those when they sent, those are last mile, just in time. Custom critical, UPS sent. They was coordinated right as the Final Four is declared. So as you can already tell, that's going to be kind of hell. This year, the men's Final Four is in Glendale, Arizona. Now, there's some amazing amount of stuff that it takes to put all this stuff together. She says it takes dozens of truckloads, including 5,000 portable platforms just for the floor, 20,000 temporary seats, and a 700-pound scoreboard. It takes about 2 weeks to set all of that up. You out there, who are you rooting for? I gotta go with the Vols. I gotta go with Rocky Top, right? Advisor over there. Gotta go with Tennessee Volunteers. Gotta go with the home team. All right, on episode 695 of What the Truck, I'm talking to FMC Commissioner Carl Bensel. We're diving into a little bit about the Red Sea conflict. We'll be talking about safe passage and trade, Panama Canal water levels, a little bit about U.S. ports, detention and demurrage. Lot to get in with Carl. We have So Creep Capital founder Kevin Nolan. He's doing his best Elvis impression as he talks about the brokerage casino. Can brokers really beat the house? Nolan's taking a ton of gambles in the industry. We're going to find out what worked, what didn't, how to help founders. Kevin's a fascinating guy. It'll be a good time. We got traveler Scott Pipicelli. He's talking about trucking insurance losses and the tech that can help prevent them. Plus, plenty of other stuff. And I just heard the door. That might be Kevin. He'll be on in just a bit. But right now, we got Carl Bensel, Commissioner, Federal Maritime Commission. Sir, great to see you again.
Hey, nice to see you again.
It's been too long, sir. Where are you sitting today?
I'm at home. So I'm working from home. Try to go in the middle of the week and Mondays and Fridays work from home.
Well. Looking good. What's on the desk of the FMC commissioner today?
Well, I'm doing a lot of paperwork. The government has too much paperwork. So I'm trying to catch up on stuff like that. I am also looking at the issues at the Red Sea and the Panama Canal, and you know, whether or not we should try to take some action trade actions in response to the terrorist attacks on merchant shipping. And so I'm also talking to the industry about how this is going to impact their operations. And it just depends company to company.
Yeah, you know, this is a year, it started out crazy, and it's one of those things where when we had those first attacks in the Red Sea, it was ominous, right? It was like, this is not a one-off incident. This is going to carry on for a long time, and it sort of has, so much so that the news cycle, it's almost been a little bit forgot about in the past couple of weeks, what's happened in the Red Sea, but there's been more attacks. There's been piracy related to going around the Horn. There's been all sorts of issues, but let's start there. What's going on in the Red Sea, and how is the FMC looking at this?
So it's amazing. It really goes back. I think the last time you've seen something like this was 1805 with the Barbary Pirates when they were attacking merchant shipping. And essentially the Houthis are using their terrain in Yemen to perpetuate attacks. The technology is easy to use, deploy. And the ocean carriers just really are not willing to risk their vessels, their operations, their merchant seamen. And so we have a situation where it's basically suspended most of the operations through the Red Sea. I think 75% of the traffic that used to go from Europe to Asia through that transit are being suspended and rerouted around Africa. So it's really creating all sorts of challenges with respect to how we get our goods and our international trade.
International trade, safe passage is critical, right? Safe passage, the idea that we can order something as a shipper or a consumer and it's actually going to come to us and not get hit by a drone or stolen by a pirate or something like that. That is essential to safe trade. In terms of your office, what are you helping to do to ensure safe passage, safe trade?
So we're looking at this, and I personally, as Commissioner Bensel, I'm looking at our trade statutes. We have the Foreign Shipping Practices Act and a law called the Merchant Marine Act of 1920 that both say you can look at the actions of foreign governments to determine whether or not to issue sanctions or trade remedies to attack those practices that adversely impact shipping in our foreign trade. So I am looking at that right now, whether or not it should be deployed. It would be an investigation into it. There's a lot of challenges, but you're right. The issues related to let me get rid of my phone.
Sure.
There are issues related to securing that freedom of transit, and that's a fundamental maritime law that you should have a right of innocent passage through every territorial sea. And Yemen has agreed to the international law of the sea, United Nations law of the sea. And so we're seeing a problem with respect to their ability to police their waters to make sure that companies that are just engaging in the movement of cargo can continue to do that. So we'll see. I'm still looking at it. There's some issues related to Yemen in particular, because Yemen is basically in a civil war. So there's some questions whether and how effective this could be. But I will continue to support that concept, the concept of innocent transit and the requirements internationally to protect those.
How concerned is your office? How concerned are you about a potential rise in piracy by the rerouting of these vessels?
You know, it is a big issue. It's amazing when terrorist attacks, actions, maritime attacks occur. It emboldens other places. So we're seeing an incredible rise in Somali piracy, which last time I think was 2011, 2012. I think most people in the United States would be shocked to hear that we even have piracy. It's Johnny Depp and TV movies, but we do, and it's occurring even more frequently because of the effect of the Houthi attacks on merchant shipping. We're also hearing about the potential spread of maritime attacks and attacks on shipping to other places. So we're watching that closely to see what the impacts of this are.
Is this going to fundamentally reshape trade? I mean, we're seeing a shift in ports a little bit. We're seeing in terms of port activity coming into the U.S., we're already seeing some of the rerouting that's going on and how that's impacting different ports. I mean, Canada, I think it was Port of Vancouver, they just put out an alert too about congestion coming in there. But what long, because this is going to be sustained, is it not? This Red Sea thing, this isn't going away in a month.
No. I mean, I don't think military action frankly, has been effective just because it's so easy for them to avoid, not being able to continue to attack shipping. It's very easy. So I don't see it happening. Actually, there's some evidence that because of these attacks, are gaining more political support as a leader in the issues related to Gaza. So I don't see it happening. The good news is we really had some surplus capacity. We have some new shipping coming online, so additional ships are being deployed. But that additional transit and the challenges of moving equipment around and changing everything, in my view, will have impacts economically and will create problems the longer this goes on.
Yeah. The other canal, the one we thought we would have the most concern about, especially last year, was the Panama Canal because of the water levels. Are we doing any better over there? And how is that impacting trade?
You know, my most recent reports are that it's getting slightly better. But it's amazing because in that canal, we saw basically 50% reductions in the amounts of transit. And even if you did get the ability to get in without waiting 1 or 2 weeks, you have to offload about 10 to 15% of your cargo someplace else because the water levels are low. So you really, it's like I-95 and I-10 being closed on both coasts of the United States at the same time. It's a transoceanic canal crisis.
Fortunately, the water is pretty big. There's a little more room than the highway. And it seems like, if you look at like rates and capacity right now, it seems like that stuff despite these conflicts, that stuff is still holding up. But if we have a situation where a bunch of trade picks up, that could be bad. Now, we had an interesting report on freightways. Let's talk about U.S. ports a little bit. Before we get to detention and demurrage, one that kind of caught my eye was the Chinese spy crane thing. Has your office looked into that at all? Is that a concern too?
You know, it is a concern. I think we've talked before in the past on my container manufacturing report and the fact that the Chinese manufacture 90% of the marine containers that are used in the world. But there's reports. I haven't seen the reports itself, but that equipment was put into containers, cranes that were used to potentially used to monitor or even more ominously disable the container operations, the movement functions on a container crane. I don't know. You know, I'm not going to comment on those reports, but they're certainly disturbing. The White House announced plans to replace it, to develop manufacturing. Chinese policy, maritime policy, is aimed at developing a strong maritime industrial base as a means of instituting policy, foreign policy. And so you always have to look at that. On the other hand, they do want to trade with us because they're trading substantially more Chinese goods, but it is something we should pay attention to. It's a threat.
Yeah, absolutely. Now let's talk a little bit about detention and demurrage. This was a big threat to port truckers back during the shipping crisis. You put out a new ruling. Some groups aren't happy. Some groups are happy. I believe the drayage trucking groups are happy because they can no longer be billed for detention and demurrage. Talk a little bit about this ruling and how your office came to it.
You know, it really emerged as a result of the pandemic. We saw, close to $12 billion in assessments that were put out on detention and demurrage, largely as a result of congestion and challenges bringing back equipment or picking up cargo from the ports themselves. So we really knew that we had to do something. We had new legislation that also required us to take steps to protect the public. So those new regulations, which will be somewhat of a challenge to implement, it will require new business practices, but they're intended to ensure that a trucker, a BCO, is not unfairly levied penalties for actions which they could not avoid beyond their control, and also to protect truckers, drayage trucking, from being assessed penalties by virtue of the contract of carriage between a carrier and a BCO. And so the trucker would show up and they'd say, you have to, in order to release this cargo, pay this penalty fine. And so there's protections in that. But I think we're going to have some challenges. You know, it will be the industry will have to make adjustments in how they operate. And so we'll wait. There's a 3-month grace period for implementation of this regulation. And so we'll see. But the intent was to protect the shipping public from unfair penalties that could be assessed for detention and demurrage.
Yeah, it seemed like it was much needed. And in my opinion, it seems like the ruling you made was the right call over here. Now, before I let you go, anything else that should be on our radar this year insofar as the FMC is concerned?
You know, I think we need to pay close attention to potential congestion going forward. It's very difficult. It's not only just the ships that are delayed. It's the return of equipment to the containers themselves. So this whole system of movement, once delay starts in one area, it has the impact of affecting other areas as well. So I think we should be continually vigilant about what's happening to the trade. If it's becoming unbalanced in certain areas, we learned some lessons through the pandemic, but I think they're going to be put to stress. And so I'd say, Daniel, we need to continue to sort of watch what's going on to make sure that we can attempt to adjust to congestion as it occurs, because you're basically taking away shipping lanes that provided service to between the two 20 or 30% of our trade. So we need to figure out what that means to all segments. And it's not just the ship, it's the containers, it's the chassis, it's where things move in general. So So that's the thing that I'm going to be looking at this year going forward. I'm going to continue to work on maritime data and harmonizing standards for information and the exchange of information related to movement through our port structure. So I'll be working on that as well.
Well, Carl, it seems like you have a busy year ahead of you. A little cowbell for keeping the ships running. Before I let you go, you got a pick in the tournament? Who's your NCAA tournament pick?
You know, I went to law school at Alabama, so I heard you say Tennessee's your pick, but I'm a Bama person, and so I'm hoping we can get lucky and run through the tournament.
Well, beautiful. We got one for Tennessee, one for Bama. Thank you so much for your time. Have an amazing week.
Nice to see you again.
You too. Take care. All right, everybody. Meanwhile, speaking of system of movement, take a look at this guy. Ooh, legs might have been asleep. That's what Cody in the back thinks. He just got caught off guard. Cody in the back thinks this guy can run like a 4.2, like a 4.2 40. I'm not so sure about that, Cody. I don't know. All right, Scott Pipicelli, senior risk control specialist at Travelers. That guy got lucky, didn't he, Scott? Scott? Scott's frozen. All right. Well, we'll try to bring Scott up at the end because we got Kevin Nolan in studio. We'll just bring him up. If you guys in the back, you can get Scott. Bring him up at the end. We'll get back to him around 1248, 1250. Let him know. Scott's back. Well, Kevin's here now. Kevin will talk to Scott with me.
I'll talk to Scott.
All right. Well, Kevin's here with me. Hey, Kevin Nolan right here. Scott, you ever met my buddy Kevin Nolan before?
I have not met Kevin Nolan before.
Well, Kevin, introduce yourself.
Hey, I'm Kevin Nolan. I'm founder of NTG, OTR Solutions, Marquee, Payhawk, and then my family office, Soap Creek. But I'm a freight guy. I love freight, all things freight. I got my chef suit on. This came from one of my favorite NTG employees, Marco, who runs our Laredo office. And with everything going on the border and borderlands y'all are doing and everything else, I thought, you know, give my Laredo peeps a little love.
Well, love to hear. Well, Scott over here, he's a risk specialist over at Travelers. And today we're going to talk a little bit about common losses the industry is seeing in transportation. Tell us a little bit about that, Scott.
Yeah, so we'll start with common industry losses. Some are going to come no surprise, right? Certainly we still have driver safety issues over the road. You know, vehicle accidents, rollovers, things like that happen. And, you know, part of that is new drivers and experienced drivers, different routes. But we're starting to see those happen on a more frequent basis. And this is only really being intensified by driver shortages and high employee turnover rates.
Right? Yeah, definitely. Well, especially on the high turnover rates, like you mentioned there.
Strikes of fixed objects. It's not just the impact damage, but even a small hole or tear in the trailer can lead to water damage cargo. And certainly increased distracted driving is not helping anything. Other common industry losses stem from like reefer issues. Well, drivers can experience spoilage. For example, if they don't adjust reefers properly for changing environments or specific temperature ranges, without that real-time tracking, it's tough to determine how spoilage actually occurs. Truck fires are another common cause of loss. Fires are caused by faulty brakes, seized bearings, tire problems in the power unit or the trailer. The increased cost for maintenance, parts, and labor, along with long lead times, and for some reason, some of the reasons why equipment failure remains a leading factor in cargo losses. And last, but certainly not least, we can't overlook theft. Okay? And when we talk about theft, we could be talking about anything from an entire trailer being stolen, or simply pilfering commodities out of a stopped truck or trailer.
What kind of tech we got to work on this? What kind of tech do we have to stop these losses?
So, great question. You know, there's a lot of good technology out there, but we just can't assume because it's available that it's all great. So what Travelers has is we have a team of dedicated professionals that vet different vendors, and once they're vetted, we'll put them up on our Transportation Innovation Network. And one of the benefits is that some of these vendors actually will offer Travelers customers discounts in the states where it's available.
Great. And what kind of, and how do they mitigate losses with these tech tools?
All right. So some of the different technologies that are out there, I guess some of them I say you're probably gonna be familiar with, but we're looking at technology to prevent losses and spoilage for trailers, containers, chassis, tankers, right? I mean, they all offer different but effective features. The first one we'll talk about is CargoNet. You know, CargoNet is an industry-leading source of incident data and time analysis of current and emerging cargo theft trends, right? And really it's used to help truckers, shippers, logistics companies avoid certain routes, and then also help recover stolen product on the backside of that. When we see where those pockets are, we can, you know, send some solutions out there.
How big of a theft does it really take for law enforcement to get involved? Right. I mean,
it's fast localized,
right?
Right. I mean, I don't mean to speak ill of anyone, but, it's all going to depend on where you are and what the availability is. Right. But to make sure we don't get to that point, we look at transport security, right? Transport Security Inc. provides high security locks, kingpin locks, air brake locks, seal locks, and just different types of hardened technology that we're come accustomed to.
Loud solution, too, though, right? Like, we've seen celebrities posting things.
Oh, Kourtney Kardashian. She just had her her trailer stolen. The Pittsburgh Penguins had a trailer stolen of Jaromir Jagr bobbleheads.
I mean, it happens every day, but, you know, it just seems like the response isn't always, you know,
quick.
Right. Yeah. And the stuff's gone, you know, before you blink, you know, it's gone. Yeah. And then you have a real business decision to make as a broker or as, you know, the end carrier on, you know, if insurance isn't going to step in, like, and it's going to take a while, I might lose that customer if I don't do something really fast. So, you know, it's a major problem. Well, theft is.
Yeah.
You know,
good point too about how it doesn't just hurt you. It hurts your relationship with the customer, right? Because you as
it can make your relationship stronger and better. If you handle it the right way,
make it worse.
Yeah. That's kind of what we're trying to do with Travelers is to work with our customers, whether it be warehousing, transit, storage, and do those assessments to figure, from risk control perspective, where are your losses, where are your trends, educate them on what's going on in the industry to make them less prone to those types of losses, right? Just getting back to the different types of technology, Trucker Path, I'm sure you're all aware of, right? Mobile app that gives you GPS enabled, safe navigation, route planning, allows you to avoid certain delays, which again can go back to spoilage. Management dashboard systems that can incorporate maintenance, invoices, how do drivers get paid, tracking of loads, to your point, setting up insurance provider information. And then also that important piece is that claim reporting. And again, it's a really nice feature to have a mobile app that every driver can have on their phone, really accessible to them. It just makes you feel safe and productive.
Scott, where can people get more information about all this?
So Travelers has an innovation network. I would say right now, go to www.riskcontrol.com. Right. And if there's any questions as to where it is or different resources, have them reach out to the risk control consultant, agent, underwriter. We're all one team. We're all here to help.
Cool. Hey, Scott, thank you so much. Have a great week.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Take care.
Hey, great to meet you, Scott.
Take care, buddy. All right, speaking of insurance, right? I hope this port had it. Take a look at elsewhere. Did you see this yesterday? This was everywhere. This happened in Turkey. Tradewind says a worker just got hurt. There was a worker in one of these four cranes that got hit. That got knocked down. He got seriously injured. Fortunately, not killed.
Oh, my gosh.
It said it was under supervision of a pilot at the time, too. I don't know what the hell. I don't know if they just, lost control of it or what.
I mean, things happen crazy in logistics,
So expensive and stuff.
Holy smokes. Here.
It's expensive when things go wrong too. Oh no. Down it goes.
Yeah, that's crazy. Now they're gonna have backup there.
I wonder if the repairs on something like that cost. All right, we can drop this one down. All right, well, we introduced you to the Traveler's Guide, but introduce yourself one more time in case our radio listeners are coming. Do you know we're on Sirius XM now,
too? Oh, I love that.
Yeah.
I love that. So, Kevin Nolan, transportation guy, you know, freight broker at heart. That was, you know, my upbringing, how I cut my teeth into the game. But now I run Soap Creek, which is my family office where we invest in entrepreneurs that are up and comers. We actually just closed on a business last week out of Dallas. Ooh. A truck parts business. There's a theme. I like to sell things to truck. Yeah. That's for Joe. And look, the owner of that business, Jason, is a stud, you know, ex-college baseball player, one of the biggest parts distributor for trucks and trailers in the Dallas area. So we'll be doing acquisitions and rolling that up. But, you know, we're real excited about everything that we're doing.
You know what? You know what's good news too. You don't have to have a bucket of ice water dumped on.
Oh, I could use it. I've got the worst headache today for some reason, and it's St. Patrick's Day the next day, but I didn't go out last night. Yeah. Right? I've been off the sauce for a while, and I still have the same dang headache. So I think it's that pollen coming.
It's like the echoes of hangovers past. I haven't drank in years. I used to be a really bad alcoholic. I got sober, but like I still wake up sometime, and you have like the echoes of hangover past. Like they just stay with you.
This is something, though. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the pollen coming in.
Could be.
I have an important question, though.
Yeah.
So I see Biggie and Pac on your thing.
Correct.
Do you have them east and west properly? Or
are they? Let's see. Well, no, because, well, yeah, actually, no. If this is north, that would be east right here, and that would be west.
Love it.
Yeah.
All right. Representing them right. Direction. Okay.
Yeah. Well, I got to ask you something. Are you a horse guy, by the way? I saw on your page you're like in an equestrian society.
I am. My daughters ride. So yeah. My two older daughters, they ride horses, and I also there's in Atlanta in Fulton County, there's a park that the city owns that where, you know, women and men can go and bring their horses and their kids and everything else. And they can ride and compete. It's a great place to kind of get your feet wet.
Yeah.
But yeah, I love the horse game.
Let me ask you something. You've bought a lot of companies, right? Soap Creek Capital. Their investing company. How do you decide what to like invest? Like, how did you decide to get that company you just got?
Oh, leadership. The entrepreneur, right? Everything comes from the top. Right. And, you know, he's going to roll, you know, more in than he got. Right. So he's going to stay a partner in the business with us. And, you know, it's just about that leadership. Can this man or woman, you know, scale a business, hire the right people? And, you know, is the business clean? Right. Are the books right? Is everything that they've said correct? And, you know, this was one of those.
So how do you guys how do you work for those of us who haven't like gone out and raised capital before? Are you looking for businesses that are already established in founders? Do you take like idea people who are like, hey,
not pre-money anymore. Yeah. Pre-revenue. We've done some pre-revenue deals in the past, but right now it's, you know, businesses that have started, you know, maybe have anywhere from 4 to 100 employees that want to gang up and grow.
They want to gang up and grow. Yeah. And it's all about that leadership, the founders.
It's all about that leadership, right?
Has anyone blow, like, what is something, you don't even have to name a name, but what's something someone's done to like blow a deal with you?
Oh, there hasn't been a ton, right? Yeah. I mean, but there's been some funny ones, you know, changing terms last minute, like I'm going to walk from that. What are some other reasons? Maybe their background, you know, that we always look, people have passed, things happen, but like when we're going to do a background check. Right. And yeah. So tell us straight up, you know, did this happen or just, and so don't surprise us with that. And so when we do that, we sometimes see some stuff that'll make you run away. Yeah.
Make you run away. Well, you know, it's a dangerous business, right? Freight brokerage, a lot like a casino.
Oh man. The biggest casino there is, right? Every load you take, you don't know if you're going to make money on it or not. So you got to be pretty smart, right?
Well, how does this casino work? How does the freight brokerage casino work?
Well, so the shippers are the casino technically, right? So the bigger the shipper, the more dangerous the casino. And a lot of these men and women that have gotten in the industry in the last few years have ran to the biggest casinos, whether it's bottled water, beer, whatever. They are better freight brokers than us, guys. Like, they have a better TMS. They move more loads. Like, their revenue of freight they move would make them all probably a top 5 freight broker. So that casino is happily going to take everybody who walks in the door and take those little cheap rates and make that money on it. So, you know, you got to be smart. You got to know that, like, hey, am I going to be able to make money on this? And if I'm not, am I going to be able to walk? Right? There's a lot of brokers out there with bad contracts right now, and they're going to get even worse when it gets tight. You know, it's already tight in Cali. It's getting tight in Texas. Like, people are in on some bad rates right now. And so those table games you're on, you might want to walk from. But yeah, it's a big casino. I mean, and I love casinos. I mean, I've spent plenty of time in them, not only on the freight brokerage floor, but on the craps tables.
But, like, so knowing that, right, you've still taken some pretty big gambles in your time.
Oh, yeah, still am every day.
How do you beat the house?
Oh, you got to work with the house. You can't beat them. You know, if there's that, like, one-sided, like, if it's a zero-sum game where I'm going to take or you're going to take, it's not going to work. But you got to know that, like, hey, the business model, if I'm going to go in and move a lot of loads to lose money and build my network and volume, that never works. So, you know, just go in and quote the lanes that make sense to you. Don't quote at all. Like, pick and choose. Like, I don't know how to play some games in the casino, so I'm not going to go play at that table, right? But I do know that maybe I'm good out of the Southeast going to the, you know, Northeast or Midwest. I'm going to go play that game. Right. Don't try to do everything, because they will put you in their route guide and happily put you out of business.
So you got to be super defensive about that. How do you do that? So what a lot of people are afraid of is sales reps, companies are afraid of, is losing the potential volume, losing that potential sale. How do you hold your ground while still getting
the deal? I mean, if you're losing money on it, if it costs you more to move the freight, like if your margin doesn't cover your costs, like the more you do that, the worse chance your business has of surviving. So, like, again, that volume just means you have a greater chance of going under.
Yeah. Well, so, like, do digital freight brokerages freak you out? Or anybody who sort of, like, buys capacity and supplements the market?
Well, I mean, some of them have left. Some of them will probably leave soon. Some of them have talked about switching to profitability models in the last few days or weeks. So... yeah. I mean, look, it makes sense, right? Like, you know, you have to make money. Like, every business model that I look at, like, if it has more than like 18 months of losing money in it, like, because that habit stays with you.
Yeah.
Right. And so shippers have been gotten loads given back to them every day. You guys track it better than anyone with your tender rejection. It's okay to say, hey, I'm in trouble here. Like, help is the most powerful word in the English language, H-E-L-P. Like, hey, shipper, I might have made a mistake here. The market flipped on me. I can't lose $400 a load on it anymore for you. They hear that, right? They know that, right? It's not happening right now. But when it comes back, you know, there's some people that have some rates in there that put in for 2024 contracts that they're going to get smoked on, right? And so it's okay to leave that casino and say, hey, I'm not giving you all my stack.
But Kevin, how does that work? Like, when you're building a company, some of these companies, they raised like sky high venture capital valuations. They found themselves in trouble. And you said something interesting. Some of these companies have finally decided to turn towards profitability. How do you decide when to do that when you're venture backed?
When the investors say, we're not going to give you any more money, right?
Well, that's too late though, right?
If they have good customers and good rates and a business model that will make sense, it should not be too late.
Yeah.
Right. But if you go in and say, hey, all I want to do is move as many loads as possible, and I do it at $60 a load and my cost is $120, like, bye. And they pay you in 90 days. Like, no, thank you. Right. Yeah. Like, that's not going to be sustainable business. You know, some of that might work for networks and trying to get back some backhauls on some large shippers. But, you know, the information is too good out there. The rate information, you know, you guys with your data, you know, other, you know, big boards, all these other people, they share data that everybody knows. And so the market moves fast and the shippers know that too, right? And so they've had a while here where they've, you know, enjoyed it and it's been going well, and they probably will continue throughout this year. But, like, don't stay in bad freight. It just doesn't make any sense. You waste a lot of time on it. And I always say contract freight is spot that's harder with more parameters and less money.
Really? Why do you say that? Because a lot of people live by contracts.
Because the contract has appointments. You're graded like crazy. These shippers have a lot of technology to grade. We invested in one ISO. It's unbelievable, right? And so, like, they are going to know your on-time percentage, everything else. They're great. And, like, in the spot, you know, It's a little more flexible. There happens to probably be a little more money in it, right? These appointments you have to make. You know, if you're late and you miss it, then you're going to have big detention. So contract's tough.
You taking any big gambles? You got a big gamble story? What worked out for you?
Well, I'm hoping one works out. So I'm in the Rio in Vegas. Me and a group of guys, we
like
bought
Rio, not the proverbial Rio, like a real, like the real one.
Like the casino.
Okay, we're using a lot of metaphors. I just
Right. Sure. RIO, oh,
the
right?
The actual one.
The actual Rio, we put we bought. We thought it was going to be the Major League Baseball field stadium. That didn't turn out, but it's still a great piece of property. They're redoing it. Our group has actually gone in and bought a few more casinos in the Chicago area because I know there's some freight brokers who like to gamble up in there. But yeah, like I love making big gambles on businesses and land or anything else that I think that might open up. And some of these gambles don't work out.
Yeah.
That's for sure.
Why didn't one work out? What was the issue?
The management team, right? They got a little team. They got a little bit of money. They got a little bit of, you know, like they felt like they had made it, and then the market moved, and they couldn't move fast enough with it.
When you invest in a company, do you like are you watching the founder afterwards? Like if suddenly he buys a really nice new car, maybe a few jets.
Well, he should. He should. And I've made those some of those, you know, same choices, and some are mistakes and some are good. But you got to celebrate the wins, right? You got to go on the big vacation with the family. You know, you got to buy the car. You got to, you know what I'm saying? It's a milestone, right? Like if you get somebody that comes in and says, even if it doesn't work out, if they believed in you and gave you money, that money came from somewhere, right? Like private equity groups, they collect from a lot of families, and those families made a lot of money. And then they decided to give it to you. Like you know, it's an exciting thing. It's a big accomplishment. They definitely check you in and out, your business, you personally, everything else. So if you get that win, you should do some wins, but we definitely then pay attention, like, hey, are they back in after it after a few weeks or months, you know, tops.
Are there any generational issues with founders? Are you like, oh, I can't deal with like Gen Z founder or this Gen X?
No, I think winners are just winners, any generation, right? Like, and I don't really use those terms, you know. Like, I think the best way to piss off somebody is call them a Gen Xer or a millennial or a baby boomer, like my parents or anything. So, no, just winners are winners, and winners like to be around winners. And, you know, that's one thing that all these logistics companies are having to do right now, because we all had to right size up in COVID. And then now we're all having to right size a little bit lower because volumes are less and revenues are less. And so management teams, though, are doing a hell of a job with that I'm involved with. Like, and it's tough. It's tough. I mean, we're tired. Everyone's a little tired, that's for sure. And they're tired of me probably too. But like, you know, we've been digging deep. I mean, Marquee Insurance Group, I mean, with the cancellations that we saw in the freight game, like our book every month was going down the wrong way. So we had to get heavy sales focused, you know, and it's the hardest I've ever pushed a team. And they've responded in the right way. And we're going to become the largest logistics insurance agency in the marketplace. There's no doubt in my mind. That core that we're building and what they've fought through. I mean, this washout of truckers. I mean, so all the men and women in the insurance game, like, we feel for you. We know what you're going through, especially on the truck side.
Well, Mohav shutting down. It's a good time to get into it. April 1st, Mohav is shutting. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so, you know, we tried to do it as well. They built a captive for all the trucking companies that were coming in the market, all the markets that were there, whether it was Progressive or Great West or the Berkshire companies, whoever. They said, hey, you know, we've got enough risk here. We're not taking on anymore. So Mojave opened up, and they insured all these truckers that came into the market, and then they all went out of business. So then, you know, unfortunately, it trickled into their business. So they're going out. There's like 2,000 trucking companies that we saw at the beginning of the month that needed to switch over. So we're talking to a lot of them, but the pricing has changed, and a lot of those truckers that came in the high rates now have a higher cost insurance. And it's just kind of the knockout punch, especially on that down payment. When they hit that down payment, they got to put 20% down, right? And so they're having to fight. And so we've come up with OTR solutions with the down payment program that some of the truckers are taking to stay in the market. But yeah, it's, you know, you got to get creative, you know, to keep these truckers alive right now.
What's your thoughts on all the theft that we're seeing? We kind of touched on it a little bit earlier, but we
so that's about- digital market. That's the digital. That's the digital. That's because of the digital game that we've all done.
Yeah.
I mean, I experienced it with Beyond. You know, we created an incredible technology. You know, when we were making all that money during brokerage, we invested it really smart, and we built, I believe, the best technologies out there. We had to, because what I built in the beginning wasn't able to handle our volume anymore. And then we opened it up with digital because, you know, we had competition that was doing it as well, and we wanted the trucks to flow to us. But it allowed for more fraud and freight. I mean, it allowed for more theft in freight.
Yeah.
Right? Because actors could act without more people watching them. So, you know, it's just part of the evolution. When you open up the doors a little wider, you're going to let in some bad people at first, but we'll work through it we have to. I mean, people have to trust you, and you have to sniff out who's taking your loads.
If we can't really rely on the authorities, I don't think they found Kourtney Kardashian's load. They haven't found a lot of these loads. What can we do to protect ourselves?
I mean, look,
like the brothers, the twins from Breaking Bad in the back of the
Oh my God. Well, first of all, speaking of brothers, so I had a sales call the other day, and you know, we were reaching out to a lot of the carriers that we do a lot of business with at NTG and telling them about MIG and how we wanted to work with them. We came across, so I thought I was the coolest guy on the call until this guy told me he was a 2-time WBC world boxing champ. He runs a drayage trucking company out of Houston called JD Brothers. His name's Juan Diaz. He had like the fight of the year in 2011 or 12. I start Googling him on the call, and Don King's like holding up his arm.
Oh, no kidding.
Like, he is the, I knew something was different about him when I was talking to him and I asked him. But like, the industry has just gotten cooler and cooler and cooler. I think he opened up maybe in 2012 or 13, but he's out of Houston. He's got a son who's going to be a boxer as well. But it just, you know, so then they're brothers. They're called JD Brothers. So if you ever need a good drayage outfit out of the Houston area, that guy will do a good job because, you know, he's fought mean men for hours.
There's a few NBA players, a few NFL players that have gotten into trucking.
Yeah, it's Bear cool now.
Logistics, one of those guys got into that. Do you like an athlete founder or do they?
Heck yeah, I like athletes, period.
Yeah.
Right, like, so the majority of what we want to hire, you know, we love the competitive spirit. We love that, you know, they can work in a team. We love that they probably looked up to other athletes that were around them and said, hey, I want to be like that. Right. That's what we want our top men and women at all the businesses to be, is that like, you know, that vision that the others become. And athletes are, you know, we love hiring ex-athletes, you know, whether it was a high school level, college level, professional level. Come on. Like, it's the best.
What are you dying to see someone develop? What are you like? Can someone just make this damn thing in freight so I can invest in it?
I mean, look, So we look at it hard, and the things that we invest in, one of the things that you asked me, especially on the Soap Creek side, is things that make brokers better or truckers better or more efficient, right? I don't want the Google of freight.
Yeah.
Like, that takes too much time, too much money. I mean, look at how much money some of the other people that have gone out of the business raised to try to emulate, you know, some of us top 10 brokers. It just, you know, took so much time, energy, and money, and the investors got impatient, right? So we want to create things that make the brokers, not, we don't want to create, we want to invest and use. We want to be the best users of technology and the best users of products that make brokerages more efficient. So that's why we love Highway. That's why we love ISO, right? That's why we love Lean, right? You know, that made our cost to transact lower, right? That's why we love Learn to Win. It makes our training better and more efficient. And so that's what we love. So anything that gets created, and there's a lot we're looking at right now, that make the broker's life or the trucker's life easier and cut down on their cost to transact. Because someone brought it up recently, like, we've never looked at unit economics. I didn't until we got Alan Gershenhorn on our board at NTG and OTR, who's a stud, by the way. If you just Google Alan UPS, like, he'll come up, and I'm very fortunate to have him on two of my boards. But he's really got us to focus on unit economics as a business, which we never did before. So anything that we can do to make that cost to transact lower. So like OTR Solutions just bought ePay, and ePay is a back office provider, that when the load delivers, it starts taking on more of that. Because as brokers, when the load delivers, it's not over. I mean, we have so much cost in getting the POD, billing the shipper, making sure we're paying right, making sure that the match is up. So, you know, there's just a lot of cool stuff that we've done over the last few months. And you know, we've also really focused as a management team doing the right things outside of work, because it stinks inside of work a lot right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it just very tense inside a lot of these brokerages?
I mean, it's tense in our factoring business, right? Because rates are lower. It's tense in our insurance business. It's tense. You know, yeah. I mean, there's just, it's just tense. And so we're just trying to make sure that we're doing the right things outside of work and not making our lives and everything, you know, much more stressful.
You know, it's funny because sometimes people will, they'll be like, FreightWaves is manipulating the market. Like, why would we ever want the market to be bad?
If that's happening, can I go downstairs right now? Yeah, like, hey, tender rejection has now gone to 9.
Well, I'll tell you, this is an interconnected supply chain of companies. It's not just supply chain of goods, but like in our ecosystem, in our world, the better these companies do, the more they can support one another, the more services they use from one another, the more they can spend on advertising and the more sponsorships you can raise. It doesn't help us in the B2B industry of freight when the market's bad.
No, but you got to call it like you see it.
Yes.
Right? And so that makes it like, you know, when Craig came out and I don't know when that was, maybe
22.
Yeah, like
a bloodbath.
Yeah, February 22, that article came out, right? I had to get on the phone with all my investors within a couple days of that coming out, okay. Right? And like, you know, it made sense. Okay, the market was really high. Capacity is going to shift out or whatever else and stinks, right? But you got to speak the truth. When it was really good, you loved it too.
Yeah.
Right? But when it's bad, of course, right? You get less marketing dollars. The people, you know, spend less. Instead of sending 10 to the conference or 5 or 3, they cut it down, right? And so, yeah, it's tough for all of us. I think everybody's tired.
Yeah. I got to put your box back in because I got a couple stupid videos to show you now.
Of me?
Is this? No. All right. I don't have enough of you yet. We're recording one right now.
So all right, good.
Wait. Here, just hold that in your hand. You can just hold that in one hand. All right, let's go to the first video over here. This is the thing. You do this when the trucks drive by? We need sound. Yeah. Like this Amish guy over here. Do you do the fist pump for the trucks?
Look, we do in our car, in our yeah, when we go on road trips or whatever else, we always try to get a honk. I'd say it's like 1 out of 10. Oh my God, that guy is so jacked up.
He is so jacked. Because they don't have an air horn.
Where is that? Pennsylvania or something?
Probably Pennsylvania with the Amish.
Yeah.
Do they have air? They don't have air horns on buggies, do they? They could have an air horn, couldn't they?
My daughters have shown up in Pennsylvania. They love their horses in Pennsylvania. That's for sure.
They do love their horses in Pennsylvania. Hey, you just went on spring break, did you not?
I did.
What did you do over on spring break?
I took my family down to the Caribbean, and I got a little tan still from it. I almost drowned.
Oh.
I went snorkeling. We were in Barbuda, which is right off of Antigua. And so when you're growing up and you swim in Cobb County, Georgia, and you know, you were all county or whatever it was in a 25-yard pool, right, and your parents tell you what great swimmers you were and your friends and whatever else. Like, for some reason, my daughters, who are in shape, convinced me to go with, like, the snorkel group that goes every morning at 9:45. So I go, and I was like, how long are we going to be out here? And they were like, 45 minutes. And I was like, great, can I get a life vest? They were like, ha-ha, we don't have those. And I was like, oh, this isn't going to be good. So I jumped in anyways. Long story short, I lost one of my flippers. I inhaled a bunch of water. Oh. I've only been snorkeling 2 or 3 times before that. So the mask on my nose just made me get this incredible headache. And I don't know. I felt like I was going to drown out there. But it was. So snorkeling is not for the faint of heart. Like, you think it's so easy.
Yeah.
But in the waves, out in Poseidon's sock sweat, like, no. Like, I swallowed some of that, and then I had to swim to the boat. So I scream at the guy on the boat, like, I'm not doing well, because I knew I wasn't drowning. So then I swim over to the lady who's in charge, and she has a floaty device. She's the only one that has, like, the thing they run with Baywatch, and I'm holding it, and they see some lobster, and she wants to go down, and I wouldn't let her go down. I was holding that thing. So I swam to the boat, and the guy was like, God, I wish I could grab you. I was like, I do too. I wish I had a life vest, and you could pull me up. So I had to work my way into the boat, and then I just poured water and ice all over my head. I don't know if that's the story you wanted on spring break, but it was, snorkeling is not for the faint of heart.
Well, neither is dating. Take a look at what happened to my man here down on spring break. We need volume.
I'm done with Miami spring break, bro. Like, there's no way in hell, bro. I just had this bad feeling. team member, bro. She's like, oh yeah, you know, you handsome, you handsome as to me, right, bro? Tell me why, bro. This the reason why she ended up blocking me. I got her number just now, and it's right in front of my face. She blocked me and slapped me, all type of. I really feel violated. That's crazy to me, bro. This girl told me, hey, listen, I'm from Virginia. You know, you very handsome, you very attractive, and things like that, right? But this the catch to it right now, though, bro. When she seen my feet. She threw me like that. I'm like, oh, like, that don't even go together. How are you handsome, but your toes look like that? Look like what? She just started being funny, being rude for no reason. She just threw up
gang signs. I needed those flippers when I lost mine, when I was snorkeling. That guy, I bet, can swim like a machine.
Her friend was like, girl, look at his feet. She looked down.
Those are like athlete feet. Bro, like, that's like, yeah, you ever see Michael Jordan's feet?
I've not seen Michael Jordan's feet.
Michael Jordan doesn't have pretty feet.
I'm gone.
His feet are like broken all different directions.
I'm sure the best dancers in the world, they have, you know, their feet and everything are just gone.
They're terrible.
Yeah. Gotta take care of your feet. I actually went and got a mani-pedi. I've had 3 or 4 of those recently. And you gotta take care of them doggies, you know?
Take care of them. I had a, you know, what is that thing? I forget the name of this device. It was like this white, like a pedi something or other. You get them at Walgreens, and it's like a cheese grater that you put on your feet.
Oh, they do that, like, to you. That you know what that I know what you're talking about. I laugh hard on that.
And it's gross. When you open it, it looks like a bunch of like foot Parmesan inside the little receptacle.
Oh, man. So my 22-year-old daughter and I, we got into a little beef on Friday night, and then we ended up going and getting our nails did and working it out. She's 22, man, and she's graduating college. And it's a tough time for these men and women coming out of college because she's a COVID kid. Her senior year in high school, no prom, no spring break, no graduation. Then she goes to college and they're, you know, can't leave their dorm really. There's no parties. There's none of that. And then now, like, they're kind of finding their way, getting a little social, and boom, like, you got to go out into the real world now, become, you know, getting to work. So, you know, I do think that group of men and women that didn't work at home are going to be great in the work staff because they don't have that. They're not, they haven't felt that, which is tough to get. I mean, even for me, right? It's tough to go back from the house to the office. So I am excited about that, but they're all trying to kind of like get into the, like, her and her friends, like, figure out life.
Yeah.
And so it's interesting to see what these young college students are going to be like coming out, specifically the ones that were like part of this COVID culture.
Yeah. Well, they might end up like this guy. Is this insurable? Take a look at this video right here. Take a look at this guy towing a semi truck in his Ford 150 in the snow. Don't know if this is the best idea. Would you freak out if you got that tape?
You know, first of all, for that truck up front, like, that's a great ad. Like, that's a beast, right? Especially if that thing's loaded down and it weighs 80,000 pounds, right? That's what I love about trucking. When you go down the road, you don't know if they're empty or full.
No.
You have no clue, right? And so that thing either weighs 35 or it weighs 80, right? And like, maybe if I'm driving around it, I'd like to know. But that is sick. I can't believe that's doing that.
That's the thing about being a guy. Sometimes things are too impressive to really be angry. You're just like, wow.
We'd insure that at MIG, probably. We'd find a market, right? It wouldn't be like our top market, right? Like, you know, Great West or, you know, Carolina Casualty or somebody like that's not insuring that, but we could probably find a you know, cover whale or somebody.
They say there's a lot of predatory towers out there, so maybe they just didn't want to deal with that.
Man, we looked at a towing business about a year ago, and we didn't end up doing it. And but I think towing's a necessary business. I do think some of those bills get a little ridiculous. But that equipment that they have to have to pick up 80,000. I mean, now that you just saw, well, I don't know now. Like, I'm not going to believe it anymore when we get the claim in on a brokered load and it's like there was a $20,000 tow bill. Well, you could have got an F-150, it looks like.
With the rack strap down there. I mean, how much would that have cost? Now, you ever find yourself in the wrong room? Take a look at what happened to this cab driver at the port in New Jersey. I don't know how he made it there. Like, he's just stuck amongst the dray trucks.
Oh, they had so much fun with that. Those drivers, too.
Oh, yeah. They're not going to let him out. He's living here now. That's his home.
That's how they get him to go from cab driver to truck driver. Always wondered that. And that's how they jumped him in right there.
You just surround the yellow cab completely.
Get in this truck now.
You hear they're going to kick it. Uber might leave Minneapolis?
Really?
Yeah.
I use Lyft. Uber's a competitor still.
Lyft is leaving too. Neither of them want to pay minimum wage in Minnesota, and there's some new rule coming out.
Really?
Yeah, you have to get back in the yellow cab.
Lyft, man, you get Delta points too.
Yeah. I like the cab at the airport. I like at the
airport. Yeah, nice cab, and you find out a lot about the city. Look, I don't care. Transportation's transportation.
But Kevin, tell them where they can find you.
Look, you can find me soapcreekcap.com. Kevin at Soap Creek Cap. If you've got a growing business or you know an entrepreneur that wants to grow or is looking for capital, give us a call. We'd love to help.
Hey, and you can find me at Timothy Dooner. That's D-O-O-N-E-R. You can find this show wherever you get audio podcasts. If you want to watch the video version, just go to Freightways YouTube channel. There's an entire playlist. And of course, you can hear us on Sirius XM Radio Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, replaying at 11 p.m. And of course, Tuesdays and Thursdays, you got great Shacky on there. So take care. See you at Matt's.
Thanks for having me, man. Keep doing what you're doing.